920-4624 or email to talk at cpax1070.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk It Over. I hope everyone's in a mood to have their minds expanded here today, because that's exactly what we're going to do with my first guest. His name is Florin Diaco. He's a professor of mathematics here at the University of Victoria, and he's been looking into the possibility that somewhere along the way we may have lost 1,000 years. Now, you let that sink in for a second. What do you mean? How could we lose 1,000 years? Well, when you read his book, The Lost Millennium, History's Timetables Under Siege, you start to think that maybe this guy is right, or maybe some of the people that think this period of our time has been miscounted, I guess, are correct. It's a fascinating subject, and it's a pleasure to have you in the studio today.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Terry.
Now, how did this whole idea come to you? Because, you know, in your day-to-day work, you're not necessarily thinking about losing a millennium along the way.
Of course not. So I was at a conference in Mexico in 1994, where over lunch a friend told me about the work of a colleague, the Russian mathematician Anatoly Fomenko, who analyzes history and historical chronology with mathematical tools. And he reached a very interesting conclusion, if not outrageous, some would say, that we're wrong by about 1,000 years. So what he means by that is that the Middle Ages were much shorter than we think, and perhaps they didn't exist at all.
How could we make such a horrendous error? I mean, that's an awful... A few years here or there, we can understand in those early days, but how could we lose 1,000 years? I mean, that's astounding.
It is, and that was my first reaction too when I heard about that. But then I started looking into facts, and I learned that historical chronology, so the field that decides, that tries to find out when the historical events happen, is a pretty young science. It was born about 400 years ago, and its founder was a French scholar, Joseph Scaliger, who mastered 13 languages and knew some mathematics too, some astronomy, and he was the first who created the global historical chronology we have today. Well, since then it has been changed here and there, some dates, but most of them are as Scaliger decided. Now, in order to fix some dates, first of all you need to rely on mathematics and on celestial mechanics, so the motion of the planets and of the stars.
And that's your particular specialty?
That's my expertise, yes. Yeah. And once you have, say, a horoscope, because a horoscope depicts the position of the planets in the zodiacal constellations, so you can compute back in time approximately when that configuration took place. So, and the approximation can be very good, maybe up to the day sometimes. We have about just over 3 million possible configurations, so the historical time, which is not too long, say about 5,000 years, we don't have many solutions for a particular configuration. Well, the same thing can be done about eclipses, historical eclipses, as historians call them, which are described in documents. The trouble is that they are not described as astronomers would do it today, so to have very precise records.
Right.
They are described in words. So then it matters a lot how you interpret those descriptions and whether you accept certain facts and discard others.
I guess also you run in sometimes to sort of outright misleading of people for whatever reasons, for reasons of personal power or trying to convince the populace to do things that you want them to do. That must be another complicating factor along the way as you try to get to the truth.
Of course, this can also be a problem when you read historical texts. Now, history has been challenged, so historical chronology has been challenged from the very beginning, from the time of Scaliger. So the first one who disagreed with Scaliger was the German astronomer Johannes Kepler. After him, a great figure, important scientist, was Isaac Newton, who thought that the history of Greece was by about 3 centuries too long. So he also disagreed. In fact, he wrote a book about this. It was his last book. He wrote it. He finished it just before he died, and it was published posthumously. After, and the debate continued about what Newton said for about 100 years. And in fact, it still continues today. As you see, Fomenko is one of those who, and in fact, is the first one who introduced mathematical methods in studying the problems of historical chronology.
So, I mean, this is like solving a crime scene, for detectives coming in. How in the world do you go about trying to account for all the years between now and events that we know for sure happened at a certain point? What's the process?
So, first of all, you have to fix somehow some dates.
Yes.
And in order to do that, you need some science. You cannot do it just looking at documents and connecting the years. You have to fix. You can have a relative chronology, so you can know how much time passed between two events, say. But the problem is, when did the first event exactly happen?
Exactly.
And calendars, of course, there have been calendars. People have tried to measure time always, and there have been many calendars. Scaliger himself, he spoke, maybe didn't speak, but mastered 13 languages, some of them dead languages, and he was able to analyze about 50 calendars. Now, knowing a calendar is not enough, because every calendar has also a so-called era, a starting point. For example, our present calendar has the era, so the starting point is the year 1 AD.
Right.
So knowing a calendar, if you don't know when that era took place, when that happened, you don't know much about that calendar. And in order to fix that era, you need some astronomical records, for example. That's what Scaliger did. In his time, there was no radiocarbon method, there was no dendrochronology, there were no scientific dating methods, the scientific dating methods we have today. So the only thing he had at his disposal was was astronomy, were the stars, were the planets. And, for example, let me give you an example which is quite astonishing. There is a book by Greek historian Thucydides. It's called The History of the Peloponnesian War. And in this book, Thucydides describes three eclipses. So we have a sequence, which is much better than when you have just one eclipse.
Exactly. Yeah.
The first one happened in the year when the war started, and was a total eclipse. 7 years later, there was a partial solar eclipse, and 11 years later was a lunar eclipse. Now, such a sequence, especially because Thucydides gives also the approximate time of the year and the approximate time of the day when they happened. So such sequences are not too often in history.
Right.
So Scaliger counted that the first eclipse was, the total one, was in 431 BC. Now, Fomenko found out that there are two more solutions, one starting in the 11th century AD and the second in the 12th century AD.
Hmm.
Now, the trouble is that the 431 eclipse was not total, and astronomers found that out, realized that only somewhere at the end of the 19th century. And since then, they've tried to somehow to figure out what happened, but of course, it's impossible, because if you accept Thucydides as accurate about that, then definitely the year 431 BC is wrong for the beginning of the war.
So 700 or 800 years later is when it actually happened, at least as far as the calendar that we've been accepting.
Everything is, of course, a matter whether we accept that Thucydides was right. So always when you have a historical document, you cannot accept everything that it says, because often there are contradictions. So then what historians do, and I have a lot of respect for their work, is that they consider the chronology and then look at the documents, and whatever does not fit with the existing chronology, they discard. Otherwise, you cannot make history, you cannot interpret the documents. But if you change, say, those landmark dates, then the interpretation must change too. So the whole history we have today was constructed using the given landmarks of Scaliger.
We'll take a quick break here, but just let it sink into your mind that this may not be the year 2005. This could be like 1005. It's mind-boggling. We'll be back in just a moment.
It's 2006.
Oh, yeah. Well, sorry. That's right. See, I'm off a year already.
Well, what we can say is that, you know, in fact, we celebrated the coming of the millennium the wrong time, the wrong year. It was in 2000, not in 2001.
I know.
Should have been.
Everybody was all excited about all those zeros. So, yes, of course. It was quite funny because at that time, you know, we had a lot of emails and phone calls and from people making that very point, saying, you know, why are we all running around all excited? We're a year early on this thing, you know. Wait until 2001. But
I wrote a newspaper article when the millennium, the real millennium came.
Yes.
So I got a lot of phone calls after that. You know, incredible that we didn't.
Yeah, because let's not let accuracy get in our way here.
Yeah, because in when the 20th century arrived, so in 1901, they celebrated the right way in 1901.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, they did.
Very good.
So. So how long is the commercial break?
Oh, it's about 2 minutes.
Two minutes. So it's short.
Yeah. But you never get anything really fully discussed here. You know, there's always. But then that's why there's a book that can go on.
Oh,
that.
Sure, of course. That's what people want to read, and you. It's hard to explain all these things.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You have to read them.
Is it in mostly the local stores?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Just before coming here, I went to Boland Books and to Munro's to sign them copies.
Good.
They already sold like 12 copies each.
Great.
Each of those two bookstores.
Mm,
so
good.
In less than 2 months.
Yeah, we have a system with Boland where there's a phone number that, and I'll give it to 595-READ.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who hear books being described on the air, they can just phone that number and have one set aside for them. So
sure, and you can also say that I signed all the copies.
Yes, I'll do that.
Copies are autographed. They said they sell better when they're autographed.
Yes, oh, I'm sure that's true.
You mean 10 seconds?
People like to listen to Peter Warren with a Canadian perspective on national and international issues, weekends at 11 a.m. here on CFAX 1070. You're listening to Talk It Over on CFAX 1070. Call us direct or collect at 386-1161, by cell phone at star 1070, fax at 920-4624, or email to talk@cfax1070.com.
Florin Diaco's book is called The Lost Millennium. It's available in local bookstores. And if you phone our CFAX Boland book line at 595-READ, you can have them set aside a copy. And my guest has been up to the bookstores around the city and has signed copies of them. So get yourself a copy autographed by the author. That's kind of a neat thing. People like that, you know. And the fact that you're a Victoria guy and you're at the University of Victoria, you can pop down to the bookshops and sign some copies. That makes it an extra special thing to have in the book collection. How do we find the answer to this? Because, you know, the theories, I know you've in your book you've presented kind of both arguments, but is there an obvious path to determining for sure whether our calendar is off by 1,000 years?
Well, in my book I'm suggesting a way of doing that. Namely, using the scientific dating methods, which were not available in the time of Scaliger or of Newton. So what I'm suggesting is, since we talked about Thucydides, at this point in time, we have about 90 copies, 90, so 90 copies of Thucydides' manuscript, and they have all been dated using paleography. Paleography is a semi-scientific method. It's somewhere between science and art, and analyzes the writing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, none of those manuscripts has been radiocarbon dated. And this method, I'm dedicating a chapter to all the scientific dating methods and to radiocarbon dating in particular. And I've realized studying it that though it's not 100% accurate, so it cannot tell us exactly the year, especially for something that may be 2,000 or 3,000 years old, but it can give us a date with certain approximation. So we could find out, if we analyze all these manuscripts and check them, radiocarbon check them, and then do the right statistical methodology, we could find out with pretty good accuracy when they were made.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm proposing. However, I tried myself. The oldest copy exists in Hamburg, at the University of Hamburg, and I wrote to those people asking them to give me a sample of all I need is 3 milligrams. That's about the size of a nail.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't want to send it to me. Perhaps if the book gets translated into German and they read it, perhaps then they might change their mind.
But so there's still this mystery out there. Is there any chance that things like radiocarbon dating are wrong because they have these tests have been set up using a calendar that's inaccurate?
No, because radiocarbon is has been tested using other scientific dating methods. For example, dendrochronology. So it has been calibrated using dendrochronology. Not only dendrochronology, it has been calibrated using corals, mm-hmm. deposits of corals from near Jamaica. So all these things are pretty accurate now. Fomenko disagrees. He thinks that the method is not good enough. Well, I disagree with him about that.
It's quite a distraction, or not really a distraction, but quite a branch away from what you normally do in your day-to-day studies and work.
This is true, but on the other hand, it's related to it because, as I told you earlier, my expertise is celestial mechanics, so I'm interested in how the celestial bodies move. And, well, this is more of a practical part. My work is mainly theoretical, so I'm interested in qualitative properties of the celestial bodies, like stability, whether our solar system is stable or not. So these are mostly the kind of questions I deal with in my day-to-day research. But this has been an interesting change from my work, and I enjoy it very much, writing this book.
It must be interesting for you, because, you know, as you know, many people don't put much value in horoscopes. But to find that a horoscope is a valuable tool for you in your research, you know, it gives a different value to that than we would normally expect. And I think that's kind of fascinating, that something that some people don't have much respect for is actually a useful scientific tool in really finding out how accurate our calendars are. Who would have guessed that?
Of course. I mean, when you say horoscope, you think of voodoo science or something like that. But this has nothing to do with the predictions a horoscope makes and which we read in newspapers.
Yeah.
It's just to do with the position of the planets with respect to the constellations. And that's something that tells us very precisely when that horoscope was made.
And if you can attach that to an event that's reported on by the humans who are around at the time, suddenly you have a connection, right?
Exactly.
And building that web of connections is a fascinating exercise. If you, I know that everyone's mind will be expanded reading this book. I hope it does very well for you. And the fact that it's a Victoria man who is now at the University of Victoria studying mathematics, who has written it and researched it, just makes it that much more of a Victoria triumph. The Lost Millennium: Histories, Timetables Under Siege, by Florin Diaku. It's been a pleasure to meet you, sir.
Thank you so much for having me here, Terry.
It was terrific, and I enjoyed the book very much.
Thank you.
It's not a little easy detective novel that you brush off on a weekend. You got to think when you read this book, and I hope it does very, very, very well.
Thank you.
We'll take our break here for the 11:30 news update, open phone Victoria, some discussion of the new federal cabinet, and more coming up next.
So are you.
Terrific.